Welcome, everyone. I hope you're having a great day today, and welcome as we take a look back in history. I'm Lizzie McManus.
I'm Dominic Lina.
And this is the 19th Amendment podcast, where we discuss the who, what, where, when, and why of our nation's policies. Today's podcast is sponsored by the League of Women Voters, which was established in 1920 as a merger of the National Council of Women Voters and National American Women's Suffrage Association by founder Carrie Chapman Catt. And we're also sponsored by Honey. Honey is the free browser extension that automatically finds and applies coupon codes at a checkout for over 30,000 shopping sites. Thank you so much to all our sponsors and enjoy the podcast. As you might expect, there were many women involved in women's suffrage, but there were some men too. One of the most involved women was Carrie Chapman Catt, who founded the League of Women Voters and the National Council of Women Voters. She was a stout activist for women's rights, and she was one of the first, and she got many other women involved as well. Another woman who is not normally given as much credit in this narrative is Mary Wollstonecraft. She was responsible for writing one of the first women's rights novels in the English-speaking world, A Vindication on the Rights of Women, which was published by her in 1792. It was read throughout Europe and eventually came to America and was used by many women in the suffrage, in the struggle for suffrage, as their sort of Bible and their rule book. Possibly the most famous suffragettes were Susan B. Anthony, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, and many others, including Lucy Stone and Julia Ward Howe. Lucretia Mott, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, together created the Seneca Falls Convention, organizing it and calling everybody to come. The Seneca Falls Convention, which was established in 1848 and had its first meeting then, was seen as the kind of tipping point in women's suffrage when all the women really got together and decided that they needed to make a change, and a big one, in today's society. The main organizer, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, was born in Seneca Falls, New York, to a very progressive family who believed in many women's rights. Because of this, she was highly educated and as politically active as she could be at the time. She was approached by a group of Quaker women, led by Lucretia Mott, to have a tea party and discuss women's rights. They ended up organizing a meeting to discuss and advocate for the social, civil, and religious rights of women. This turned out to be the Seneca Falls Convention. In addition to these incredible women was Florence Kelly and Alice Paul. Alice Paul sometimes gets a bit of a bad rap because she was one of the most radical leaders of the women's suffrage movements. She protested at least 5 or 6 times on record, which led to her imprisonment. She organized women to chain themselves to the White House fence in order to protest, and they led a hunger strike by 10 or 20 women, and they ended up having to be force-fed by the police. On the other hand, Florence Kelly was very calm. She headed the National Consumers League, one of the places where women were the most involved. She helped to shape the nation's consumption patterns, and she organized boycotts of products made with child labor and other abominations. While the Seneca Falls Convention was seen as the tipping point and the beginning of the women's suffrage movement on a national stage, it's a little bit more complicated than that. Some do view the Seneca Falls Convention as the beginning, although some say it could have gone back as far as 1792, with the publication of Mary Wollstonecraft's A Vindication on the Rights of Women. In an American stage, the women's rights movement started as early as the 1830s, and it became intertwined with the struggle to abolish slavery, and it resulted in the proposal for the 19th Amendment, which was introduced to Congress in 1878. In 1878, it really reached its tipping point because women on both coasts were being staunchly involved. The issue continued for over 40 years, becoming more and more controversial, during which the women's rights movement became militant, conducting campaigns and demonstrations for congressional passage of the amendment, and then for ratification by the states.
Now, before women's suffrage got to the White House, it had to start on a much smaller stage, mainly in the West and in the East. In the West, 13 out of 16 states had already allowed women full suffrage. Earliest was Wyoming in 1869. The main reason that women were allowed suffrage in the West is because the West was just starting out and they needed as many votes as they could to vote on social issues and political issues. Male legislators supported women's suffrage because they believed that women would help support laws fixing the social problems of the region, mainly drunkenness, gambling, and prostitution. These behaviors were commonly associated with young, single, tangent, and immigrant population in the West. Women's role in the frontier was commonly referred to as social civilizers. Some believed that allowing women to vote was the first step in helping establish a more orderly community on the Western frontier. And the female voters also would bring Puritan norms of behavior into public life. While in the East, it was a lot harder for women to win suffrage, there were two major organizations, the National American Woman Suffrage Association and the National Woman's Party. While they were similar, they are quite different. The National American Woman's Suffrage Association approached emphasized education and sought to gain votes of women state by state, and the National Woman's Party sought to secure a constitutional amendment and had a more aggressive strategy than the NAWSA. The NAWSA had approximately 2 million members enrolled at the height of its campaign, while the enrollment of the NWP never exceeded 50,000. While the NWP didn't nearly have as many members as the NAWSA, but NWP had more of a significant impact in gaining voting rights for women because of its attention-grabbing methods. In 1915, the Pennsylvania branch of NAWSA succeeded in persuading state legislators to give the male electors the option of extending voting rights to women. But as the focus turned more federal, many Pennsylvania women joined the NWP-led protests in order to convince Woodrow Wilson to pass a woman's suffrage amendment. Some NWP women went as far as to burn Wilson's speeches and picket the White House. This caused some of these women to be imprisoned. Pennsylvania branches of NAWSA and NWP used a variety of tactics to advocate for their cause, such as holding meetings, distributing literature, and writing newspaper and or magazine articles. After women were finally given the right to vote, it led to many other things, such as women attaining more respect than previously, and also gave them better opportunity for better education and jobs.
More jobs available to women in this time. 1890 to 1920 was known as the women's era. Women had greater economic and political opportunities. They were able to own property, their wages, and make contracts and wills, and 8 million women worked for pay in the year 1900. Another organization that was very helpful in the suffrage movement was the Women's Christian Temperance Union. In 1890, they had over 150,000 members. They pushed for rights to vote so that they could push temperance laws, which was being helped by the passing of the 18th Amendment. Frances Willard, one of their leaders, says, "A wider freedom is coming to the women of America. Too long has it been held that women has no right to enter these movements. Politics is the place for women." Another organization that was a big help in the suffrage movement was the National Consumers League. Leader Florence Kelly led this, and she was able to help women shape consumption patterns in the United States of America, and she also organized boycotts of products made with child labor and other abominations. Her organization and many others helped with new opportunities that came to middle and upper-class white native-born women, especially in office work. By 1920, office workers and telephone operators made up 25% of the female workforce, while domestic servants had gone down from 45 to only 15. New technologies also created many opportunities for women. Immigrant women and African-American women who worked did so primarily in low-paying factory jobs as domestic servants or in agriculture. With all of these new work opportunities, being a stay-at-home mother regained its original appeal when it became one of many choices, rather than the only available option for many American women. Against popular belief, many women were voting prior to the ratification of the 19th Amendment. This was because giving women the right to vote was a state issue. Wyoming was the first state to allow women to vote, and the last one was Tennessee in 1920. World War I, which began in 1914, ended up helping the suffrage movement. Men saw the patriotic support of the war in women, and it convinced them that it was just wrong to deny women the right to vote. The mistreatment of Alice Paul, that crazy radical we mentioned earlier, and many others in prison also opened some eyes and convinced the Wilson administration to support women's right to vote. The eventual ratification of the 19th Amendment was pretty anticlimactic. It was greatly overshadowed by the 18th Amendment, Prohibition, like mentioned earlier, which was ratified on January 16, 1919, and affected both men and women. However, Prohibition did help a little bit. Because this was an issue that affected women as well as men, the women became galvanized by this travesty and became even more politically active. After the ratification, women got the vote. It was a real victory, and women were elated. But not all of them were satisfied. Alice Paul, the suffragette who loved radical displays, was nowhere near satisfied. She wanted women to also have equal rights to education and employment opportunities, so she proposed what she called an Equal Rights Act. However, not all the women supported this because they believed it could take away some of their other hard-fought benefits, like a right to a pension and other laws which limited their work hours. Without a doubt, the years from 1890 to 1920 was the high time for women's rights activism, and it eventually culminated in the ratification of the 19th Amendment in 1920. However, this didn't really improve the lives of women, and also didn't really change their expected social roles of wife and mother. Quote, "Like many other oppressed populations in American history, they weren't given these rights. They had to fight for the rights that were said to be inalienable."
Today, even though women have the right to vote, the votes of everyone are counting less and less. Gerrymandering, a political tactic first recognized in 1812 by Governor Elbridge Gerry's use of it, is the strategic division of voting districts to sway the vote in a particular direction. It has become so rampant today that in population of 60% blue and 40% red, the districts can be gerrymandered to such a degree that the yellow can win the majority. This can be orchestrated against parties, genders, religions, and or races.
Despite gerrymandering and other political blockages that have been affecting women's rights to vote, even after the passage of the 19th Amendment, they've still been making great strides. In 1933, Frances Perkins was appointed by President Franklin D. Roosevelt as the first female Secretary of Labor. 1936, the federal court legalized birth control for uses other than the prevention of disease. And in 1964, the Civil Rights Act, which made discrimination on the basis of race, religion, or gender illegal, was passed, and the Equal Opportunity Commission was established to address discrimination claims. Today, the number of people exercising their right to vote in America is constantly on the rise, and for the past 30 years, the number of women voting has outnumbered that of men by a margin of at least 2 million every year. After a struggle of over 45 years, in the national stage, women had finally won the right to vote across the entire nation of America. Analyzing the who, what, where, when, why, and even some of the hows, it is clear that this is not just a cut and dry issue, and it is not as black and white as it may originally seem.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. Have a great day.